Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
What are the Long Box Guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very favorite people from when I was a very little kid. Joshua Hopper, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing okay, and I'm drinking a Lights Out, a nice light pale ale from my favorite brewery, Treehouse.
Treehouse. I like Treehouse. I'll be there. I'll be in Palmer tomorrow. Do you want me to pick up anything?
Nope, because it's not in Palmer, but you're fine.
Where is it?
Chalco.
All right, then. Mikey, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing fine, and I am drinking a Michelob Ultra, which is available in Palmer, Massachusetts, for those of you in the area. Feel free to stop by and get one. Michelob Ultra. When you want to be a drunk bastard, but not a fat drunk bastard.
That should absolutely be their tagline. Tommy, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm doing okay, and I am drinking Vermont Spirits No. 14 Bourbon Whiskey with Vermont maple syrup in it. And it's delicious. It's delicious.
Okay. I don't like additives like that. Usually stunt whiskeys. They don't really do it for me. I am drinking a West Cork scotch that our good friend and Patreon patron Tony Corbett brought back from Ireland. And I just realized earlier today that I probably guilted him out of this bottle because he said he was going to bring me back something. There were like 9 bottles on the things. He brought back like 9 things. I saw the one from West Cork, which is his hometown. I'm like, oh my God, you brought me one back from your hometown? That's great. I really appreciate it. And later, after I opened the bottle and took a big swig and realized it was an expensive scotch, I'm like, this probably wasn't for me. This probably one his dad put aside for him when he was a wee lad or something.
So you mentioned Patreon. What's Patreon?
Hey, I'm glad you asked. Patreon is a way for our listeners to give back to us and perhaps even support us a little bit. For as little as $1 a month, people can go over to the Patreon page at patreon.com/thelongboxguys and donate to listen to not only an extra podcast every week called The Geek Leak, but also just give us a couple dollars, help us out, get us out to our things, and just show how much you really like listening to us.
Shut the front door. For just 25 cents a week, I can get an extra podcast?
Well, unless it's African American History Month, and then no. Sometimes that's only 3 weeks and some days. I can't do math.
No, you can't.
I can't. How about July?
You know who could do math?
Who's that?
Batgirl.
Batgirl was excellent, Matt. Almost an oracle at it. Huh?
I see what you did there.
And, Mikey, is that going to be the subject of this week?
Yeah, this week we're going to be talking about Batgirl. Now, for those of you who...
But has there only been one Batgirl?
Why, that's a good-looking question, Tom. There have been 6 Batgirls. We did an entire podcast on Barbara Gordon, who most of you will recognize as Batgirl. But she was not the first, and she will probably not be the last Batgirl. So rather than focusing in on the most popular one, we're going to talk about some other people who have taken on the Batgirl mantle, because it's going to play directly into a movie that is currently out called The Birds of Prey and something, something Harley Quinn.
Actually, they have changed the name of the movie.
Because people were like, I want to go see that Harley Quinn movie. Oh, it's not playing.
I think they just changed it to Harley Quinn Birds of Prey, which is what everyone was calling it anyways.
Yeah. That's fair.
So who was the first Batgirl, my good friend Mike?
Yeah. Nope, that was me. It's Betty Kane.
He could have said, Josh is telling us.
Yeah. Betty Kane was the niece, I believe, of Batwoman at the time. And she discovered Batwoman's alternate identity and convinced her aunt to train her in the ways of fighting crime. Betty Kane showed up, yeah, like I said, it was Batman 139. And she had a couple appearances as Batgirl between 61 and 64, but then sort of disappears out of nowhere, only to return in later on because they thought there was a lot of chit-chat around the old water cooler, that Batman and Robin were possibly closeted homosexuals. And so to try to squash that sort of talk, they decided to add Batwoman and Batgirl into the comics as sort of
– Beards?
Yeah. Yeah. Beards for Batman. So they came in. And even though they had that short run there, later on in the 70s, Batgirl joins the Teen Titans. Then they eliminate her in Crisis, and she comes back as – she's got two different names that both have something to do with fire that I'm going to forget. It's
– Flamebird.
Flamebird. What is it? Flamebird?
Yep.
And then what's the other one? There's another one.
Because Flamebird and Nightwing were an old Superman storyline. So because Dick Grayson had gone from Robin to Nightwing, they decided to make Batgirl go from Batgirl to Flamebird.
Right. And then later she becomes Hawkfire, and they gave her a flamethrower. Who knows?
Because that's what everyone needs.
Because that's what everyone needs.
When you're fighting crime, it's the only way to assure there's no collateral damage. Because flamethrower is known for being incredibly precise.
Pinpoint accuracy. Over three or
flames
four.
Flames just go right out.
Yeah, there's definitely no collateral damage with the flamethrower. So they've she's had a journey around in which she's been Batgirl, not been Batgirl, and then they sort of popped her through various incarnations. But always she is, like a lot of the Batman crew, no superpowers. She is a gadget-based and athleticism-based character, and a lot of her public persona at times in later is she is a professional tennis player.
Professional tennis player. That sounds like a lot of fun. You alluded to the closeted homosexuality of Batman and Robin. That was brought forth and kind of historically known as part of the Seduction of the Innocent, a book that tried to demonize comic books in general. And that book led to a lot of mothers and fathers not allowing their sons and daughters to read comic books. It really changed comic books and even leads us into the the censoring of comic books.
Yes, the comic book code authority, but it does not have anything to do with poor Betty Kane, who has been disserved throughout her history. I always thought she had the cutest Batgirl outfit.
Well, you were wrong, because the cutest Batgirl outfit was obviously the Batgirl outfit from the TV show, and my entire adolescence will speak to that.
Yeah, you're right.
Who was Batgirl number two?
Batgirl number two was Barbara Gordon. So instead, we should talk about Batgirl number three, because when Barbara Gordon was thrown on the trash pile of DC Comics by Alan Moore and rescued from that heap by John Ostrander and his wife, and she became Oracle, they decided that they wanted to create a new Batgirl. And they went with somebody who, for a lot of people, who started reading comics in the early 2000s, is their Batgirl. Her name is Cassandra Cain. Her backstory is very interesting. David Cain, the world's most dangerous assassin, decides that he is going to start training girls to be his protege. He has an intimate relationship with Lady Shiva, the most dangerous fighter in all of the DC universe, and takes their daughter and raises her without teaching her how to speak. And she only can learn – she doesn't learn any language, and all the parts of her brain that should be learning language learns how to read people's body movements, making her an ultimate fighter. However, she's unable to communicate basic thoughts to anybody else. when she is rescued by Batman, she learns that she can be something other than an assassin. Now, for almost 8 or 10 years, she was the Batgirl in DC Comics. She had totally replaced him, and she does have a very cool design. She is the Batgirl that's in all black. It looks like her mouth and her eyes are sewn shut on her mask, and she's just got that little yellow symbol, bat symbol right on her chest. She is known in the DC universe as one of the greatest martial artists because she's the part of her brain that was supposed to be for speech pattern. It focused her in on reading body language. So she knows what a person's going to do before they even do it. She is comparable, if not better, than Lady Shiva at martial arts, putting her superior to Batman. But the thing that is the most interesting about her is she is about to have her own graphic novel now called Shadow of the Batgirl by a writer named Sarah Kuhn. And Sarah is an Asian American, and I just want to read the introduction to this graphic novel that's coming up because it plays into diversity. I've always thought of myself as a sidekick. Growing up as an Asian American geek girl in a very small town, that's all I thought I could be. I loved reading about superheroes, fantastical beings committed to saving the world, but I never felt like I could be one because I never saw anyone who looked like me centered in these stories. Cassandra Cain was one of the first Asian girl heroes I saw who actually got to be the hero. She wasn't the sidekick, she wasn't cannon fodder, and she wasn't there to teach anyone a very important lesson about racism. She was freaking Batgirl, and she was biracial like me. I devoured every appearance, obsessed over every story point, and adored the way the creators, Kelly Puckett and Damon Scott, envisioned her. So Batgirl, for a lot of people, was a stereotype-breaking character. Now, she does have the whole stereotype of being Asian. She has to know martial arts, but that's integral with a fighting-based character anyways. So I really respected her. And then they fucked with her because DC Comics, I will say this till my dying day, hates Batgirl. First one gets shot and crippled by the Joker, the second one. And the third one gets brainwashed by Deathstroke and David Kane and forced to kill people. And loses her identity. She ends up taking over the League of Assassins in a horrible 1 year later storyline that I recommend no one read. It is a bunch of shite. So her first series from 2000 to 2006, excellent series exploring her as a teenage girl who never learned how to speak and or communicate with anybody in any way, shape, or form. She kisses her first boy, who happens to be Superboy, the clone Superboy, who was the surfer dude back in the early 2000s, much to Batman's chagrin. He does not want Superboy anywhere near Batgirl, who he protects like a daughter. It's a really good series. Then she has a 6-issue run to kind of clean up the mess that the in 2008 that had happened to her in 2007 when they did the 1 year later storyline, where they were trying to explain that, you know, she was brainwashed, she wasn't actually a bad guy, etc. And like Damon Hellstrom, her main villain in this is exposition. Because the first issue is Robin for 4 pages explaining what happened in that 1 year later storyline and explaining how it didn't actually happen. Oh, it is horrible. So if you're going to read any Cassandra Cain, go ahead and read the early stuff. Surprisingly, in the New 52, when they decided to bring Barbara Gordon back and miraculously heal her and take away one of the first, you know, one of the best handicapable people in comic books and remake her Batgirl, they needed to do something with Cassandra Cain, and they made her the Orphan. And her storylines as Orphan in Detective Comics are also really good.
Like, so you said Cassandra Cain took over in 2000?
Oh, you're right. You know what? She is not the third, is she?
I'd like to party like it's 1999, Mike, and forego my back of long box and talk about a little story called No Man's Land, which is so big that I'll probably talk about it next week as well, because it is a massive, massive story in the DC universe in terms of it's so voluminous. And in that story, Helena
Bertinelli.
What's her last? Bertinelli, also known as Huntress, took over as Batgirl. And in this No Man's Land story, Gotham City has been ravaged by earthquakes. There's just pockets of the city has power run on generators, and the entire city is basically brought back to the Middle Ages. I mean, the society is crumbled. There are sections that are still have police presence, but most of it is run by different crime lords. Part of it, Batman is patrolling and is keeping the crime at bay. Part of it, Gotham police has been able to still patrol and keep crime at bay, but other parts are controlled by the Penguin, the Joker, Killer Croc has part of it. There's lawlessness in other parts. For some unknown reason, the government has kind of sealed off the city and preventing people from leaving or coming into the city. And in this, Huntress has taken over as Batgirl, and Batman has requested that she guard a certain section of the city, and she tries her best to do it, but she is outnumbered and outgunned and gives up the section that Batman requested that she keep track of and hold for him. And at the end of it, she disappointed Batman, gave up part of their turf, and thus gave up the costume of a Batgirl. And that's when Cassandra Cain takes it over, right shortly thereafter. And like I said, there's No Man's Land. It has a lot of good subplots and storylines in it. Robin comes back into the city. He was originally outside of the city. He sneaks back in, and Batman sends him off into some tunnels to try to find some food stores. And he runs into this criminal that controls rats. And fights them off with Mr. Freeze also isn't involved, and he fights off Mr. Freeze and this rat person, and it really has some really great subplots in the story. Yes, Tom? I can't hear you because you're muted. You're still muted, Tom. You're shouting at nothing.
Sorry, I was doing some of my best screaming there. Tell me what happens on Tuesday. Which are we going day by day here? What the fuck, Tommy?
This story
sounds very complicated. From saying
to this story, and I still haven't gotten to the end.
I fell asleep for like 4 minutes of your diatribe, and I still you're still going.
It took over 6 months of all the Bat titles, and it had crossovers with every other title. But I will tell you, I did read the Shadow of the Bat issue recently to refresh myself on Helena being Batgirl. And I will say she does have one of my favorite dialogue scenes with a couple of guys that she saves from a gang attack when they're like, oh, you're Batgirl. And she goes, how do you know I'm not Batman? And they're like, well, because you're a girl. And she's like, yeah. So, why can't a girl be Batman? And they're like, well, because he's this big hulking dude. And then she's like, you just saw me kick those guys' ass, right? Yeah. So, if you got your ass kicked, would you go back and say, hey, this girl with, you know, magnificent boobs just kicked my ass? Or would you go back and say, this big hulking dude named Batman kicked my ass? She didn't say the magnificent tits part, but it's implied.
It is implied.
Always.
See, you could have gone that way, LT, instead of telling me about giant rats and Mr. Freeze.
I'm just saying that this No Man's Land story is so involved and has so many different pieces to it. And it's huge and it's massive and so much happened to it. And in there, Batgirl changed. And Mike didn't even register on
Don't
his
you
radar.
Blame Mike Dude, for telling me about Mr. Like Freeze fighting giant rats. Don't you do it.
LT's right, though. I did completely forget about Helena being Batgirl. And she wasn't the only person who played a part in No Man's Land. There was also another person who would go on to be Batgirl other than Cassandra Cain, and that's Stephanie Brown.
A spoiler, you say?
What?
What? Daughter of the Clue Master, the Stephanie Brown, who would eventually become Batgirl, has a tale almost as twisted as the previous Batgirl. So this particular Batgirl, Stephanie Brown, was first appeared in 1992, created by Chuck Disis and Tom Lyle. She's the daughter of the criminal mastermind, the Clue Master.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait, did you just say criminal mastermind, the Clue Master?
I decided to add the word mastermind. I'm sorry I did that now. I'm looking at a couple of different pages, and none of them say mastermind, but I decided to put it in there, and I now see why these were edited out of my Wikipedia page. Mike, are you the one that edited those words out of my Wikipedia page?
Anybody who's read any Clue Master comics would have done the same.
Fine and dandy. Here's a Batgirl that had her fair share of controversy also, including dealing with teen pregnancy. The fact that her father may have murdered a babysitter who raped her as a very young girl, and also her torture and supposed death at the hands of Black Mask. This was a very controversial Batgirl who was brought back, much to a lot of people's chagrin. We like to see, you know, our dead stay dead. But this particular Batgirl was not quite the martial artist as some of the previous ones. Her job was to spoil her father's plan. That's why part of her persona was the spoiler. She was going to spoil the Clue Master's plans by being the big monkey wrench. Though the thing that led to her death was she was trying to implement one of Batman's big plans to get all the families together. But when she did that, she forgot one big piece, and that was Matches Malone. Matches Malone was supposed to be one of the people she invited to help get all the families together. What she didn't know was Matches Malone was actually one of Bruce Wayne's alter egos that he used to infiltrate the underworld. Without Matches Malone there as part of the plan, she didn't really get Batman's plan correct. So when it spun out of control into a giant gang warfare, she gets captured, horribly tortured. She escapes briefly but dies in the hospital. One of the other little controversies that happened there was that when she was dying in the hospital, it turned out that she could have been saved, but the doctor on duty, I forget her name, could have saved her but decided not to because she was trying to send a message to other young people not to become superheroes because that's how teenagers die. I thought that was kind of a weird caveat and ending to that particular storyline. Leslie Thompson, when confronted by Batman, Dr. Thompson claims she willfully withheld the treatment to send a warning to any of Gotham's youth intending to follow Stephanie's example. That is dark, if you ask me.
It is dark, but you also have to remember that this whole the storyline with gangs and the sort of the interruption of violence by people in society like doctors. The early 90s, like 91 to 93, was the most violent time in American history for violent crime. It was the height of the gang wars. Violent crime in the U.S. has dropped almost 30%, 28% over average from the early 90s. This was the time when pretty much everyone was looking at what the gang problem was, how it was evolving, and what people could and couldn't do about it. It was a – I mean – there wasn't the internet at the time, but if you look at the crime statistics, it was a really odd time for the U.S.
Yeah, this wasn't the early 90s. when the storyline.
No. Tom? I thought you just said it was early 90s.
It was 92.
Oh, it was? Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the, I mean, the height of gang violence in the United States.
That's pretty early, Mikey. I don't know what you want me to say here.
How much earlier do you want
to get? I'm sorry. I forgot she got brought back to life. Because I'm like, I remember reading her comics in the 2000s when she's Batgirl before. She was the last Batgirl before they did
the rebirth. Yeah, that's 2009, 2011.
Yeah, okay. So that's why I was confused. I'm like, no, she was Batgirl right before the rebirth. But that's right. They brought her back to life.
Yeah, she's first introduced in June 1992. And the only reason I made a little bit of a face when you said that is because Antebellum America was an incredibly violent time for African Americans and minorities, but most of those crimes against those people, those disenfranchised folks, was hugely underreported. So yes, the 90s were an incredibly violent, terrible time when it came to crime in the United States, but there were probably a time just after the Civil War when it was much, much more dangerous to be on the streets of America.
We'll call it modern America. Yeah.
We'll call it absolutely, Josh. I don't mean to nitpick with you there, but that's just something that as a historian I kind of think about. So without going into any more detail on to the spoiler, having her brought back in the 2000s may have been a mistake, may not have been a mistake. It kind of depends on where you stand on bringing characters back. But I did enjoy the 90s run of the spoiler. Which brings us to number five. Who's got number five?
No one.
No one.
The last Batgirl that we have to talk about is Misfit. She was a member of the Birds of Prey. She had magical powers, but only appeared as Batgirl a few times. She didn't have her own series. It's kind of weird. Batgirl Barbara Gordon, who most people think of as the quintessential Batgirl, never had her own comic book series until after the New 52 started. She had a one-issue special, and she was the primary character in the Batman family and co-starred in Batman comics for a little bit. But Cassandra Cain was the first Batgirl to have a comic book series, and it lasted from 2000 to 2006. And so just a little afterthought on my part. Misfit, again, like I said, she was very minor, only appeared a couple times as Batgirl. Not worth really even going into. For all you Misfit fans out there, write your angry emails to luckybastard@outsidethelongboxguys.com or go ahead and tweet us at the Long Box Guys.
If you want to make 100% sure that we'll read them, write them on the back of a $100 bill and send them into luckybastard@luckybastard.com. Can they do that? I don't know how the internet works at all.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit.
I got a little slot on the side of my computer. I'm pretty sure that's where I put the money.
Yeah.
We don't even own that main, Tom.
Right. Oh. Well, I have a
if you prefer Batwoman, you can use PayPal. Batgirl, you can use Venmo.
There you go. Venmo, very tasty.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Mikey, what do you got at the front of the long box?
At the front of the long
quickly
box?
I translated there.
Yeah. At the front of the long box, I have Superman Heroes, and I wanted to talk to you guys about it. Clark Kent has recently come out as Superman in the Brian Michael Bendis run of Superman, and I wanted to get your guys' opinion because at the front of the long box, the Heroes comic is the other heroes reacting to Clark Kent's decision to out himself, and I suppose the next issue will be Villains, where the villains react to his announcement. Before we get into your reactions, I just want to say one of the things I did like about this book was Clark Kent flies back as Superman to Smallville and talks to one of his elementary school teachers and tells him, I assure you, I never cheated. I did not use my X-ray vision on anything. The grade I got was the grade I earned. And the teacher says, of course you earned that grade. Nobody cheats to get a C minus. And I knew you would never cheat because I saw you getting pushed down all the time. And it doesn't surprise me that you're Superman, because every time I saw you get pushed down, I saw you get back up again. I thought he was going to break into a Chumbawamba song, but he didn't.
Nobody gets to break into Chumbawamba.
But what do you guys?
We were going to Chumbawamba.
We're not.
What do you guys think, though, of Clark Kent announcing to the world that he is Superman?
So I got to ask, what is his marital status at this time?
He is married to Lois Lane, and he has his son Jonathan, who is now a teenager.
Really?
How much power does Jonathan wield?
He's Superboy, so a fuck ton.
Yeah, I guess as long as Mom doesn't buy a bullet, we're all good.
Well, and do you want to be that villain who gets Superman wanting to kill you?
Sure, what's the big boy scout going to do? Put me in jail? Fine.
Or throw you into the sun.
Might kill you.
Oh, my one weakness.
My one weakness? Throw me into the sun? Damn it, Josh.
So my problem, I think, Mike, is that there are people in the world, right, who have a motivation that lasts beyond that they're not concerned about their own death, right? And that would put Lois Lane squarely in the crosshairs of people who are like, I am completely and utterly willing to die to make a statement against Superman. And I don't know if that's a smart move by Superman standards.
And it doesn't even have to be about Superman. I mean, somebody who wants to make a statement and just get his word out there about the fact that, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken no longer has cheesy nacho fries. You know, that level of crazy actually exists out there. And killing someone just to get that message out, you know, to some very sick people, that would work.
The sheer amount of property tax on the Fortress of Solitude would prevent me from doing that.
Yeah. Good point.
There's a word for burning yourself called self-immolation. Now, there's a word for burning yourself to
death.
That's two
words, Tommy.
Yeah, whatever.
Tommy is two words. Tommy, I'm not great at counting, but I just want you to know that's absolutely 100% two words.
He put a hyphen in it.
It's true.
Put a bird on it, put a hyphen in it. All right, fine.
Put a hyphen in it. So Josh is absolutely right, but I think beyond Lois Lane, he put all of the people that have friended him in the world at risk. He put Jimmy Olsen, he put everyone, you know, everybody in Smallville is at risk.
512 people on his Facebook. I'm just saying. 512 people on Facebook.
Everybody at risk. Because there could be somebody who gets a dirty bomb, who decides to take out Smallville just for the press, you know, who's unhappy with America, whatever.
I agree with that list, except for Jimmy Olsen. Because Jimmy Olsen was always Superman's pal. Like, no one didn't know that Jimmy Olsen knew Superman.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like it was this.
511 other people on Facebook.
I know.
Yeah.
So you guys are looking at it exactly like Batman looks at it, like you have endangered everybody. But the way Superman is viewing it is, I am Clark Kent. Superman is the disguise that I put on, and I am not being truthful when people only see me as Superman. And one of the other things, though, I don't know if this played in too much to his decision, but Lois Lane was caught on camera kissing Superman, and she has been getting a shit ton of people just calling her a whore because she's married to Clark Kent and having an affair with Superman. And it really bothered It didn't bother Lois Lane as much. She's like, I don't care what fucking people think. They're trolls. I don't give a shit. But it bothered Superman a lot that people were saying that about his wife.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you said that Clark Kent is Clark Kent and Superman is disguise. I got to agree with what was said during Kill Bill. You know, I think that Superman is who he is. I mean, he can put on whatever suit he wants, but he's still Superman. And Clark Kent is the disguise. You know, and Clark Kent is what he sees people as weak, frail, and meek. I think that's always been what Superman thinks of us, you know, in the best of ways and in the worst of ways. So, you know, saying that, you know, Clark, Superman is in disguise, I never really bought. I have always thought that no matter what he's wearing, he's still Superman. So Clark Kent is more of the disguise.
Well, he's certainly rescuing his wife from harsh words in replacement for bullets and bombs. So yeah. I get the idea, the sentiment, yeah. Right, where you're upset that people are verbally haranguing your wife. But you've exposed her to way more risk than social pressure.
Yeah, my wife's a college professor. She gets called a whore for no reason whatsoever.
So the other thing I thought was interesting, Bendis also was the guy who, during Civil War, wrote Spider-Man outing himself as Peter Parker. And it was fixed by Doctor Strange later on, casting a spell to make everybody forget. I think it was Doctor Strange, or maybe it was Mephisto made a deal or something like that.
It was Mephisto. He made a deal to save Aunt May or some crazy shit, yeah.
But in this comic, Zatanna, when talking to Superman, is like, you know, I can't just cast a spell to make everyone forget. And I was like, nice.
Sure, she can't, but Felix Faust can.
Yeah. And then
I got $5 that says Felix Faust is the corrector on this one.
And then Jimmy Olsen, when he's talking to Superman, Superman's like, I'm really sorry I never told you the truth. And he's like, no, it's good, I knew. And he's like,
no, we're all good. Like, seriously?
Come on, Jimmy.
You think I knew?
Yeah, and he's like, come on, Jim. And he's like, no, really. I've known for quite a while. And Superman's like, really, did you? And he's like, yeah, because only two people in the universe call me Jim. Everybody else calls me James Olsen or Jimmy. Only two people call me Jim. Clark Kent and Superman.
And Superman. It
didn't take me a lot to figure out that they were one and same. Now, if you don't mind, I got to finish this work for Perry. Can you leave me alone?
I gotta go.
Everybody knew, dude.
Everybody
it was
knew.
A pair of glasses. Yeah. All right. For the law box, you know what? I'm going to read that fucker. Tell me, what do you got in the back of the law box?
I got No Man's Land.
Did you not hear that he spent the entire week just reading that one storyline so he could talk about Helena Bertinelli being Batgirl?
All right.
And he's not even finished with it.
Before we go any further, please tell me about the time she was in the sewers fighting giant rats with Mr. Freeze.
That was Robin. Pay attention.
It was Robin. Robin sent by Batman to find out where these
you left off, buddy.
Wait, did Catwoman
stumbles
ever
cross some high school kids who were, had taken on new names because they had been playing D&D, basically living on their own, and they discovered the food stores, and they get found out by a group of villains. This villain that controls rats. And then Mr. Freeze and Robin's got to fight them both off. And Robin holds his own against both. He defeats Mr. Freeze, which is no small feat.
So Robin at that time was Tim Drake, right?
Yeah.
Did Catwoman ever get those discs to Batman?
I don't know. I haven't found that out yet.
Mike, you're a bastard.
300 fucking pages since that storyline. Next week.
Son of a bitch.
We might find out next week. Tune in next week when we'll find out if Catwoman actually gets those discs to Batman.
So Batman.
And how come Catwoman was helping fight the rats? It seems like a no-brainer. You know what, Mr. Freeze?
Batman had sent Catwoman to New York to steal a set of discs from a security company that was hired by Bruce Wayne to safeguard them. Catwoman steals them from the security company in an elaborate plot that took a good 100 pages. She steals them. She's supposed to get them back to Gotham within 48 hours. She puts them up to bid for the highest bidder. So, and then we never hear about it for 300 pages.
So let's just stop there. Batman doesn't know how to back up his own data. He's got to hire. He's got to outsource.
We don't know what the desks are.
He did have a backup.
Josh,
but it got destroyed.
You need to set up a cloud account for Batman.
Apparently, yeah. I mean, yeah. There's
this
no.
This was 1999.
Still,
you know, he'd call it the Bat Cloud.
He had
branding,
a
baby.
Oh yeah.
He had a set of backup discs in a park underneath a cemetery. But yeah, they got destroyed.
That's where everybody stores their digital media. Give them a break.
Yeah.
Tommy.
Who is off site?
Tommy, are we done?
We're done for this week.
Josh. Sweet Josh. Please tell me you got a good tangent to wipe the bitter, bitter taste out of my ears.
So, as some people know, we are going to be at Pensacon.
Pensacon?
Not too long from now. By the time this thing pops, it's going to be right around the corner. It's going to be like a couple of days. We're just going to be there any second now.
Wait, it's next weekend?
Yeah, when they listen to this, it'll be next weekend.
Jesus podcast, Christ. Yeah.
We time travel in this bitch.
Yeah, we time travel. Only forward. Always forward, Pop. Anyway, Tom, you nothing, not even a slow clap for that? Damn.
Fine.
No Luke. I throw Luke Cage references. You just sit there like a dog. Anyway, we are right around the corner, and it has been my pleasure and fun to try to create the cosplay as we are all going as individual characters from the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon from the 80s. And from that, I have to say, coolest roller coaster you've ever been on. I mean, clearly, I've never been transported to the world of Dungeons and Dragons, but I have ridden some goddamn cool roller coasters in the world.
Yo, that's a good one, Josh. Who's going first here? I gotta look mine up.
So, I'm torn. Right. I've been on like the Incredible Hulk down at Universal where you're strapped in and it is just wild. And I've been on the Superman ride at Six Flags, which is just phenomenal. But for me, the greatest roller coaster is at Riverside Park, the Thunderbolt. Because it's the scariest roller coaster ever because it's made of all wood and it's been rotting for the last 40 years, even when we were kids and getting on it, and you never knew when it was about to fall apart.
And it only has a lap belt that you really can't tighten. So when you go over the hills, you come off your seat by about 6 inches and come slamming down. You could actually fall out of that fucker.
The Thunderbolt, at the time, it was one of the largest wooden-based roller coasters in America.
You are confusing the Thunderbolt with the other one. The big white wooden roller coaster was not the Thunderbolt. The Thunderbolt was the one at the south end of the park where it was only a four-person car. That was the Thunderbolt.
I might be thinking the Cyclone.
The Cyclone is the big wooden roller coaster that was there at the end of our high school years when it was still Riverside.
And that was one of the biggest.
Don't get me wrong. The Thunderbolt was scary as shit. And it was a horribly built roller coaster.
Yeah.
The Cyclone was the biggest wooden roller coaster on the East Coast for a while.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure which one your guys are talking about. I mean, I agree, Mike. The Cyclone was horrifying. The Thunderbolt.
The Thunderbolt was horrifying. Yeah.
It was horrifying to get on that because it didn't even look like the car should stay on that roller coaster.
It probably didn't.
I'd say a couple of times over the years, it did not.
There were like four satanic priests at the bottom of that, just holding it together, trying to give Satan a better name.
And I had a similar experience to the Thunderbolt in Montreal on a wooden roller coaster called Le Monstre.
That was a chick, dude. That was a chick, and she had a wooden leg. And you were just super drunk. I remember that night vividly. You kept yelling, "La Monstre, take me for the loop again."
was as weird as this.
We kept dropping loons on her.
It was a wooden roller coaster, I swear.
I just was surprised when he was barfing up all that funnel cake. So my daughter is a roller coaster aficionado, and she is sitting here listening to us, and she is insisting that it is the Beast in Cincinnati.
The Beast is in, Kings Island. Yep.
Kings Island, yep.
The Beast in Kings Island is was for a long time the largest wooden roller coaster in the world. I don't know if it still holds that title. But the Beast was built probably about 6 or 7 years after the Cyclone. I've been on the Beast. It is also an incredibly uncomfortable ride because wooden roller coasters depend on the flex of the frame in order to support everything that's going on. So as you're riding these coasters, you can see them move in horrible ways that you just think, oh, dear God, why is it doing this? And the Beast is a great coaster. And if you can't get on the front car of the Beast, you're just wrong. Like, get back in line. It's a great coaster, though.
That is a good – I haven't been on that one, but that one looks fun.
I was banished to Ohio for a year, so I managed the Beast a couple of times.
So about a million years ago when I lived in California, my wife, as a surprise for me, tried to rent a car and take me to Six Flags Adventure somewhere.
San Jose?
San Jose, maybe?
Santa Clara, actually, I think.
Santa Clara, and we went to they had the Green Lantern there. And it's this crazy roller coaster, the cars move independently. So every single car could just flip over by itself, kind of depending on how you were moving. So not only did you have like six cars going through all these loops and all these big downhill turns and stuff, but it was also kind of flipping over on itself also. And it was terrifying. I think that was in California. It was somewhere, but it was terrifying.
What about you, Josh?
So when Christina and I went to Japan, her family, while we were on the mainland, they own one of her cousins is a professional driver, either in limousines or buses, and they rented a 20-person bus, and like 17 family members got on it, and we all went to Fujisan, Mount Fuji, to spend a few nights there, and it just so happens the hotel we stayed at was attached to an amusement park. And the roller coaster there, Takabisha, at the time, was the steepest drop angle on a steel coaster in the world, and held that for 2 years, and we got to ride that coaster. And it was just an amazing roller coaster. I think the initial drop is 141 feet. And it's just a great steel coaster. It was a good long ride. And at the time, it was one of the best coasters in the world. And we didn't even think – I thought we were just staying at some hotel near the mountain, and that was all we were getting. And it just so happened we're at an amusement park with like three world-class roller coasters at it. And we got to ride Takabisha. And I didn't know until just now looking at it because I wanted to see how high it was. Takabisha in Japanese, in both hiragana and kanji. In hiragana, it means high-handed. And also in kanji, it means high-flying car. So in Ooh. Japanese, the name of the roller coaster is also a multilingual pun. Kind of fun. Fun facts.
Fun facts.
Yeah, my back is too messed up to really ride roller coasters. I rode the Incredible Hulk because you're strapped in so much, you really don't move at all. And those are the only kind of roller coasters I can do now.
Hmm. All right, was that everyone's roller coaster experience?
Yeah, I love me a good roller coaster.
I enjoy a good roller coaster, too. Lainey loves them. I'm happy just going on the flumes. I like flumes better. I don't know why. For today, I'm going to go past my 3-18 and do a social justice one. I recently purchased Jimmy Olsen number 127 from 1970, and it's Jimmy Olsen Lives in a Slum. This is part of my Rat in the Crib series. So one of the tropes that I've been following for a while is whenever anyone wants to show in a comic book how bad slums are, there's always a rat in a crib. And God bless you, Jimmy Olsen. You didn't disappoint me. Rat in a crib. In this issue of Superman, Jimmy Olsen is trying to expose how bad the slums of Metropolis is with the help of Superman. He is fired, quote-unquote fired, from the Daily Planet because two of the biggest advertisers of the Daily Planet refused to keep sponsoring the paper if they're going to pursue the slums of Metropolis. So Perry White says, I'm going to fire you, Jimmy, but I want you to keep following the story. We're going to do it kind of underneath the table, and when you get enough to really get these guys, we'll print the story. So Jimmy Olsen goes undercover, lives in the ghetto. One of the funnier scenes is Jimmy brings a box lunch, and it's full of roaches after a couple of minutes in the ghetto. So Superman rushes in to save him from roaches. Now, look, we all want a super watch that has a high-frequency pitch that only Superman can hear. But if I rang that goddamn thing every time there was a roach in my food, back when I lived in Hotel Hell, Superman would have just had to been a roommate. He would have just had to move in. Not only that, but Superman also makes a big show of using his laser vision to disinfect his hands and the rest of the kitchen because the roaches were disease-carrying. This is part of my...
Wait, what year was this? What year is this picture?
Unfortunately, it was only 1970. Yeah. This is way past How the Other Half Lives. Way past the height of the tenement, you know, the real scourge of the tenements of the 1920s and 30s. This is what I call one of my you meant well kind of comics. God bless you. You meant well. But what you really did is just kind of furthered stereotypes by printing a comic book like this. But in all honesty, you didn't mean well and you were trying to expose a different segment of society to what it's like to live in these slums. You didn't do your research. You didn't really understand the subject matter, but God bless you, you meant well. So I'll give you a B- on Jimmy Olsen number 127 from 1970. What happened to that cat, Mike?
Jesus, Mike. Leave the cat alone. You bastard.
My wife has entered the room and the cats are ecstatic because they know they are about to get fed.
Oh, I thought she was. I thought my wife entered the room and it was like Frau Blücher.
Frau Blücher.
Thank you, Joshua, for Christ's sakes. I guess that'll bring us to plugs. Who's got a good plug for us? Mike?
I'd like to plug Pentagon.
Would you now, boy? You sure you want to? You sure you don't want to plug Mr. Freeze's Rat Extermination Service? You want to go back for that?
Yes.
And revisit this gem?
Round 12.
Tell us about Pentagon, my friend.
Tell us about it.
Pentagon. It's a magical land where there's food and people and great artists. I can't wait to see Wade Acuff did the cover work for the Pensacon program this year, and it looks fantastic if you go to the Pensacon website. There's going to be fantastic artists. The program looks great. We are doing so damn much stuff this time. go to any one of the, like, 8 sessions that we are making a presence in.
That is true. I'm really looking forward to seeing Weird Al. I'm going to pony up the money when we get another chance. Got to get me a Weird Al picture. Going to get me a Diamond Dallas Page picture. Of course, I'm getting a picture with the girl who did the voice work for Sheila the Thief. Got to make sure I do that when I'm in my Sheila the Thief regalia. And, yeah.
Yeah, group photos for all that shit. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, boy. Mikey, what do you got to plug this week? Hey, you know what I like to plug? I like to plug Kirby Crackle. Kirby Crackle does all our geek rock music, and they do a terrific job of it. I tell you, when I'm gearing up and packing this week, what song am I going to be playing?
Ring Capacity.
We're coming home.
Oh,
we're coming home. I love Ring Capacity is forever on my running list. That's a great song. I got Ring Capacity followed by Wrecking Ball. I love Wrecking Ball. You can pack to it. You can fuck to it. You can run to it. Wrecking Ball. It's a Miley Cyrus song. But coming home is all about going to cons and getting ready to go to cons. And by the gods, that is my all-time go-to thinking about going to a con song right there. Coming home. Kirby Crackle. Listen to it. Love it. Live it.
It's called Mikey, going home.
I know. Mikey, are you wearing a Zatanna t-shirt today?
I am. I'm wearing an Alex Ross Zatanna t-shirt.
Well, that looks terrific. Josh, you have anything to plug?
What do I have to plug? Well, first, of course, Friendly Neighborhood Comics. I haven't been down there as often. I'm hoping they're cleaning that place up. It was a little clustery last time I was there. I would also like to thank or plug. Tom? Who's your favorite actor?
My favorite actor, Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum has a TV show on the Disney Plus channel, and it's just.
It does.
Jeff Goldblum being Jeff Goldblum doing stuff. If you haven't watched this show, go check that out. I have a newfound respect
yeah.
for Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. Sushi rollers find a way to roll sushi. That is a fun show.
I do love the cadence of his voice. It's very relaxing. I love his show. You should go see that. Check it.
Yep. Glad I didn't say Terry Crews.
Yeah. Me too.
Terry Crews, by the way, has a great Christmas special. Has anyone watched the Terry Crews Christmas special?
I have not.
It is awesome. It's Terry Crews painting a Christmas tree, chatting. And it's so Bob Ross, it's Bob Ross's Bob Ross. And it's not a joke. It's Terry Crews likes to paint. And Terry Crews is talking about painting, and he paints a Christmas tree. He walks through what it takes to do what he's doing. It could have been his, like, tape to take over the Bob Ross show. Terry Crews Christmas special. Get it. Love it. Do it. I also like to thank GeekOrthodox.com.
They'll be at Pensacon.
Yes,
GeekOrthodox.com.
Not only will they be at Pensacon, they'll also be doing the nerd karaoke sing-along.
The sing-along.
Hopefully we get a good episode, good thing of The Witcher. Metal versions.
It's a sing-along.
Sing-along.
Along.
Come along, sing-along, do the song of Coca-Cola.
I don't sing well. No, it's not a thing for me.
It was. You didn't like Chip and Dale?
No, I just don't sing well.
Oh, you don't?
I don't. No. It's the fact of life.
Not the best dancer either.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take it all there and you have. It's just the fact of life.
Facts of life. All right, well, no more plugs, so I guess we're going to go right to goodbyes. Josh, Pensacola, Florida, Murphy's Pub. Come on, man. Is that your sector? Awesome.
That's my sector.
Do you got a nickel? You got a nickel for me? I might have to borrow a nickel, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, the nickel's coming up. We're all kissing the moose. We're putting a dollar on the wall. We're having that big-ass, crazy-ass burger, and we're all just moving along.
But then we're going to eat the nickel worth of the bean soup.
And the bean soup.
Bean soup. And Tommy, I know it might kill you, but you're going to eat some of that honey bread? Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why you get it without the honey. It's not the honey that'll kill you. It's the carbs.
There's a lot of carbs in the honey.
There's more in the fucking bread, man. Like, oh man, I shouldn't have the honey on that, as he drinks a beer and eats the bread. But Tommy, what's this podcast like to you? Or any last words for us?
This may not be the podcast you desire, but it's definitely the podcast you deserve.
You don't deserve any better. Mikey, do you have any last parting words for us? You don't? Is it because your wife is feeding the cats and they're meowing like hell? Just nod yes. There he goes. Mikey's nodding yes. So yes. I'll say this for our good friend Mikey. This podcast for him is like Drunk History.
But for comics.
But for comics. And for me, let me just say this. Don't just what you hate. Just love what you love. We'll see you next week on the podcast. Bye-bye. Beep boop. I love porn.